Back together again, you and I, brand new week, Monday, October 16th, 2023, right here on Connecticut Today. We kicked off the show talking about the current legal tussle surrounding absentee ballots in Bridgeport, and we got some more comments on the ballot situation from Southington GOP State Senator Rob Sampson. Connecticut News Junkie and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill stopped by for his weekly Monday update. As expected, yes, 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 boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, as we like to say, the Fifth Amendment, the amendment of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, number 5 out of 10, that prevents you essentially from, incriminating yourself, testifying against yourself. And as I've interviewed people, talking about this ongoing and ever-evolving Bridgeport absentee ballot mess that you heard there, top of the hour in Chris's headlines, a lot of people from bloggers to legal experts to prosecutors to defense attorneys have said, yes, we are going to see exactly what we saw on Friday with the invocation of the Fifth Amendment. Let's get you a little deeper here. And you heard Chris Williams in the top of the hour news talk about that. A little more detailed explanation to all this I want to get into. And a very, very good story by Dave Altomare and Andrew Brown, both writing in the Connecticut Mirror, one of the great microsites here for local news in the state. If you want to check it out, ctmirror.org. Wanda Jeter Pataki takes the Fifth in the Bridgeport election lawsuit. I'll read you a little of this, and then I have a thought on this and see if you agree with me on it. But if you have some thoughts, if you've read about this, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, 203-333-9422. The subheadline or the subhead in the story is, I learned, that was a phrase when I spent a few years in newspapers eons ago covering sports. I didn't do news. A Bridgeport elections official says here in the Mirror that absentee ballots should not have been counted in the primary between Joe Ganim and John Gomes. That's not me saying it. That's what an official, the officials out there, it's hockey season, I can say that. We can say officials organization and just throw in an A. Lawyers for John Gomes called two key witnesses to the stand in court on Friday. Both, though, says here, declined to answer questions, exerting their Fifth Amendment right against potential self-incrimination. And we've heard that said in various ways over the years, right? On advice of counsel, I choose to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination and will not answer that question. It's something like that. I guess you can say I take the Fifth. Your Honor, I'm not going to answer that. My lawyer tells me that's a violation of the Fifth Amendment, whatever. William Bloss spent 37 minutes, says here on Friday, questioning Wanda Jeter Pataki, who sat mostly silent on the witness stand as she watched video clips that apparently feature herself placing absentee ballots into a drop box. William Bloss asking questions regarding her role in distributing, collecting, and depositing absentee ballots, and 71 times. Jeter Pataki's attorney, John Gulash, asserted her privilege even for simple questions like where her desk is within City Hall. And again, folks, let me just pause here because I know you're listening. You're saying, why are you reading all this? You're taking glee in reading this. Well, no, I'm actually not. But a lot of people are busy during the day. You have work, you have kids, you have families. You may be nauseated by this whole thing. So I'm trying to keep you up to date as to what the reports are saying here. And not a lot of us can get to the courtroom on this stuff. So Wanda Jeter Pataki, and you have to understand, everyone's innocent until proven guilty in this country, no matter, you know, what the case may be. Through her attorney, she pleaded the fifth. She took the fifth 71 times. The only questions she did answer involved her job at City Hall. She was recently placed on paid leave and says she has worked for the city for about 20 years. Quote, I got a letter in the mail that I was on leave until the city investigation is completed. She confirmed yes when William Bloss, again, who is the attorney for the Gomes campaign, asked if city investigations involved absentee ballot allegations. Video surveillance footage allegedly shows Jeter Pataki and former city councilwoman Anita Martinez delivering documents to ballot drop boxes used in the lead-up to the September 12th election. The story states further here, William Bloss played a 19-minute compilation video that spliced together images of several people placing ballots into drop boxes. The video evidence is the centerpiece of the Gomes effort to overturn the results of the primary. And again, I have maintained the minimum that needs to come out of this case is the elimination of those ballot drop boxes. We really don't need those. We did, and they're not going anywhere. I get it. I understand it. But we had fine, free, and fair elections for probably a couple of hundred years in most places in this country, you know, without ballot boxes, without these drop boxes, without no-excuse absentee ballots, without automatic voter registration, without begging and pleading and sniveling and, you know, crying with people to vote. But now any bit of security in this whole thing is, you know, deem the magic words of voter disenfranchisement. The video evidence is the centerpiece of the Gomes campaign to overturn the results of the primary. Now, Bloss asked both women if it was, in fact, them depicted in 24 separate video clips. And he asked in several different ways whether they, and here's the key, folks, here's what you have to pay attention to. At least one of the parts. He asked both women if it was in fact them depicted in 24 separate video clips. And he asked, according to the Connecticut Mirror, in several ways whether they were handling other people's ballots, which could potentially be a violation of state election laws. Bloss said the question is whether absentee ballots were mishandled, and the answer to that is literally yes when you see the videos. He continued, quote, there was concerted activity. You see ballots being handed out to other people, and you see her, I guess meaning Jeter Pataki or Anita Martinez, escorting people with ballots to the drop box and then walking away with them. Jeter Pataki remained silent during most of the questioning, Martinez as well. They both allowed their defense attorney, John Goulash, to again invoke their Fifth Amendment right for them. Gomes' legal team is attempting to convince Superior Court Judge William Clark that a substantial number of ballots were illegally handled by Ganim supporters and delivered to ballot drop boxes throughout the city. Now, it's unclear whether that argument will be enough to convince the judge to order a new primary election. Bloss saying later every absentee ballot that was cast in the election lacked the clerk's signature. That's another issue here, is the proper signatures on these ballots. And again, there was a number of things brought up. But again, and I wanted to start with this today because I'll ask the same question I've been asking for 2 weeks. Now, I have no idea how this is going to play out. I really don't. I'm not a lawyer. I know election law is a very specialized brand of law. We know the people in this case, especially Mr. Bloss, is reputed to be very, very good in this. In fact, I was at a hockey game over the weekend. I was talking to an attorney from the area saying that, you know, the lawyers involved here are very good because election law is not like doing closings on houses or wills or powers of attorney. You know, it's a very specialized area of the legal profession. But here's the question to you. Is anything going to change? I mean, what is to stop, for example, and I understand there's a constitutional allowance for people to do this. But what if, and who knows how this is going to play out? The court proceedings will probably take 2 or 3 weeks, as we've been told over and over again. What if everybody who could be in trouble, not necessarily is, we don't know how this is going to shake out, but what if everybody who could be in trouble just keeps taking the Fifth? Is that you in the video? I'm taking the Fifth. Okay. Did you mishandle absentee ballots? I don't know. I'm taking the Fifth. Who told you? Here's the key question. Now, I assume there's going to be more kind of juicy questioning of all this stuff. I mean, here's the key question. Will the questions come as to, and it may have been asked already, forgive me if I didn't mention it, but who told you to do this? Did you do this of your own volition, as they say? Were you warned against doing this? How many times have you done this? Did you tell anybody you were doing this? Did you specifically know that this was against state law? Folks, it's going to be fascinating. I am telling you, this is going to be fascinating on two fronts. Whatever the judge decides in this case, I don't envy Judge Clark as to what he has to decide, because, again, we've talked about this over and over again, and, you know, you've heard people like me say it, and other experts say, you know, judges don't, keep this in mind, judges don't generally like to get involved in the electoral process. They don't. They have in the past when there's been a level of funny business where no matter what the judge's leanings may be politically, they say, you know what, this is a do-over. We need a do-over here. Now, here's the question. Even if we don't have a do-over, or we do, is anybody going to take this in the least bit seriously? All right, 2 hours down, two to go. How are you? Back at it on a Monday, the 16th of October, 2023. You and I together. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Back to the phone calls in just a bit as we're keeping an eye. The testimony starting this past Friday in court in Bridgeport on the absentee ballot mess. Listen, we don't know how this is going to shake out. A lot of folks arguing the Fifth here. So if everybody takes the Fifth and nobody admits to anything, what's really going to change? What can the General Assembly do to make things better, to at least give a little more confidence, if only to the people of the state's largest city in Bridgeport, that there are going to be tougher penalties? That going to happen or not? Rob Sampson joins us, Republican State Senate member, District 16. Let's talk about this with him, because I know he's following this as well. Hey, Rob, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
I am delighted to join you, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and Rob, we're on Friday, I'm reading all the summations. You probably saw them over the weekend and today about Friday. Well, you know, a lot of folks taking the Fifth there, Rob, in court in Bridgeport. And look, I get it. That's their constitutional right against incriminating themselves. But, Rob, here's my worry, and I know it's yours and other people I've talked to in the caucus. No matter whether we have 1, 2, 3, or no guilty charges proven against anyone, what happens after this whole Bridgeport mess is cleared up, if anything? What do you think will happen? What should happen? Because what I'm hearing, Rob, from some of the leaders up there on the other side of the aisle is, hey, let's not overreact to this. And that's driving me nuts.
Yeah, oh, it's driving me more than nuts, Paul. I've been standing on the floor of the State Senate and the House of Representatives before that, debating election law for the last decade in Connecticut. And I can tell you that it's one of the most frustrating things you can possibly imagine, since the Democrats refuse to acknowledge anything wrong is happening. You know, this is not the first time. You know, maybe a dozen or so people have been convicted of similar forms of absentee ballot fraud in the past. And as you mentioned, I mean, this is still an alleged crime, you know, the video that has surfaced and what they're debating in court over this past week. But I think it's pretty indicative of what can happen at the very least. And what's frustrating is, though, even though it's quite clear, and I think the average person on the street understands completely what can go wrong with this process once you start expanding voting that is not in person, but rather occurs by mail and out of the sight and, you know, view of the public, can lead to, you know, erroneous ballots, fraudulent ballots. And if those make it into our system, they can affect the outcome of elections. Right here in Southington, a neighboring town to me, my good friend was defeated in a race for state representative by one vote in the last election. So it doesn't take much. What's remarkable is that in this court case, the attorney for the defendants, he said that we're talking about 24 drops and maybe 9 people. And then he diminishes that to say, oh, this is not some kind of great conspiracy. I'm like, 24 drops? I mean, how many votes are we talking about? The margin of victory was only 250 votes here. It wouldn't take much to alter the outcome. And I think everyone knows that. Your turn to speak.
Yeah, no, Robin, you're right, because in an era, Rob, where sadly a lot of turnout numbers are down, right? Just because of that, when you have fewer votes being cast, and you know this as an elected official, just by the properties of math and statistics, not red, not blue, not Democrat or Republican, the fewer the votes, the more weight, Rob, each vote carries statistically. And you're right. A lot of people, Rob, I don't think understand that a lot of elections, particularly now when we're so polarized in this country, whether it's a local official or a state house or a state senate seat, you're talking, I mean, I've seen races and you have too, 100 votes, 150 votes. It's not like these winners and losers are winning and losing by thousands of votes here.
Right. I won my very first election to the state house in 2010 by 45 votes, which was a mandatory recount. It was less than a half of 1%. And we have a number of those every cycle. So, you know, this is nothing to sneeze at. And there's a bunch of things I would want people to know. I mean, sure, certainly we can talk about the notion of voters being disenfranchised and the polarization that exists. The thing that matters to me more than anything is that the people of Bridgeport that are listening need to understand that the Democrats in Hartford, even the ones that might have been victimized by this exact same type of process in the past, are still denying any desire to change it. I stood up in the state Senate. I think the last time I talked to you was the day before the special session. Mm-hmm. And we had the special session. I spoke for an hour and a half. I went through a litany of problems with our system and about how we don't have proper verification of signatures and that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, holes in our system compared to other states. And then I offered 5 amendments, very, very simple amendments. Let's do away with the drop boxes. Okay, let's do away with the drop boxes while this investigation is pending. How about if we put a signature verification system in place? And finally, why don't we put in reasonable criminal penalties for people that would you know, engage in election fraud? And in each and every case, party line vote, the Democrats voted them down. Even people that I think know that this is a real problem.
And, Rob, you mentioned things, an aspect of this that I always bring up. Look, there are states, and I think a lot of them are out west, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, who have liberalized their voting and voting by mail. But as you mentioned, there are security levels there. And I know a couple of states I was reading about took, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to do a really in-depth study and came to an agreement with their lawmakers as saying, okay, if we're going to do this, these are the very strict security steps that we need here. And look, I'm all for doing that, Rob. I mean, if we're going to do this, I don't see the problem with saying, okay, we're going to go progressive a little on this, but let's do things, like you said, like signature verification or more regulations on drop boxes. But it just frustrates me here. At least now, Rob, hopefully it'll change, that some of the leaders are saying this is not necessary.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm delighted that there's actually a little focus on this issue as a result of the video. It's a shame it took something like that to actually raise awareness to the level where the press is paying some attention. I'm afraid they're not paying quite enough. You know, after the special session, they didn't do much reporting across the state on what really transpired and how the Democrats refused to take any ownership of, you know, correcting a policy. Instead, they, you know, they gave us all, a high five for, you know, putting in an election monitor in Bridgeport, which we still don't have, by the way, and the election is only a few weeks away. Yeah, you're absolutely right. In Connecticut, their focus has been on expansion of access to voting, which is fine. And, you know, I completely understand no one wants to prevent anyone from being able to cast their votes, an important right that people have. And I stand by it 1,000%. But at the same time that you are expanding access, you have to pay attention to security. And they've ignored security. And I mean, when I say they've ignored it, they have purposely left gigantic holes in our system. I mean, we found out actually in court that they're not verifying signatures at all. And they're not even verifying that each ballot comes with the appropriate stamp from the post office or the receipt date stamp time from the town clerk. Mm. How are these ballots making it into the system? It's a real mess.
All right. So, Rob, finally, do you anticipate this when we get after the we get past the holidays and get into January in the new session? I would think we'll have some resolution of the Bridgeport situation. So are you guys and gals in the GOP caucus going to, you know, bang the pots and pans again on this and not let this die? Because, you know, I'd be shocked, Rob, if we didn't get anything major out of this Bridgeport case. So is this, at least for the GOP, going to be a major issue coming up in 2024?
I hope you're right. And I hope that there is a focus on it that remains in the media and that the public becomes concerned. I mean, we already know that if you poll people in both political parties, the number of people that are concerned about the security and the integrity of our election process is way, way down compared to when you and I were kids. You know, it's a real live issue, and it ought to be addressed. But so far, the Democrats in Hartford have wanted no part of it. They control every chairmanship. They control every decision about what gets a hearing, what gets voted on. And year after year, I make a valiant effort. But they just slam the door in my face and say, no, we'll worry about it next year, Rob. And next year never comes. And that's what happened at the special session, too. They said, these are great ideas, but we'll have to wait till next year. But I'm not going to hold my breath, and neither should anyone else. People, if you are concerned about your election, you got to talk to your lawmakers, particularly in Bridgeport, and tell them that you want action.
Rob, thank you. 16th District Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson. Rob, take care, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. There's Rob Sampson there, who is banging the gong up there in Hartford, or the pots and pans, or the wall, or the ceiling. Look, he's right. There are other states, and you could look this up, who have expanded mail-in balloting, who have expanded absentee ballots, but they have taken a very deliberate, systematic way of doing this. I think it was Oregon or Hawaii or some state where you can essentially mail your ballot in. But as Rob said, there are things about the condition that the envelopes have to be in, the condition that the signatures have to be, their signature verification. Now, when you start arguing a lot of that with people, they say, well, just because somebody doesn't have the proper signature on their absentee ballot or ballot application, do you really want to void their vote? Well, Yeah. Why would you want to do that? Well, will a bank cash a check without a signature? Well, that's not the same thing. Well, it should be. Will your bank take your check if the numerical amount you've put in on the right side of the check is different than what you've written out in longhand? Look, you have to have standards. There's nothing wrong with that. Will they take a check or a deposit if the account number is off by a number? No, they double check everything. Why do we allow less with balloting? It's mind-boggling. 514, get back to open phones to wrap it up in just a bit. When we do that, it'll be a 203-333-9422-333-WICC. As we said, set upon a fresh week on this Monday, October 16th, 2023. Every Monday in this segment, we'd like to welcome in our buddy, our pal, Terry Cowgill. You can read his pretty much Connecticut-centered stuff at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and he blogs about that and other more regional and national stuff at substack.com. The column there is called Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. Not too bad. I just got two vaccines in the same visit, so this is going to be a real adventure.
Well, I think, so you woke up your immune system, and we'll see what happens over the next few hours. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. I have to go at least get my flu shot. I've had COVID like four times, or so I'm still thinking about that one. But and you know, I only go not for health reasons, just to get the lollipop at the front desk. That's the only reason I.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's like going out to dinner just so you can have that little mint at the cash register.
Absolutely. Top off the dinner there. So, Terry, let's start locally before we go nationally. What might be on your mind this week?
Well, as I survey, you know, the landscape, I mean, well, there's so much going on in terms of Connecticut politics.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of keeping my eye. I'm trying not to get too bogged down into details. But I'm looking more and more now at the at next year's elections, the midterm elections in the state, and I'm also looking at local elections. And I know there's a lot of interesting ones going on in the state. What'll really be interesting to see, because, you know, Connecticut is one of the few states in our region that has entirely partisan local elections. So it will be very interesting to see how Republicans do on the local level, and whether they take back some towns that maybe they didn't have before. And certainly the mayor's race in Waterbury will be an interesting thing, interesting one to watch, because of the longtime mayor. O'Leary is retiring, not running for re-election. He's a Democrat, and Waterbury is kind of is one of the few states in the, one of the few cities in the states that does have a fair number of Republicans. So I think the Republicans might have a shot to take back the mayor's office for the first time since maybe Philip Giordano.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a while back, absolutely.
Yep.
And, of course, Terry, everyone is talking about the Middle East here. And, you know, over the years, Terry, guys like you and me, I sense we're about the same age. You know, for decades, we used to see, obviously, there were major wars, but there are flare-ups between Hezbollah, Hamas, and Israel. And back years and years ago, Egypt was involved. But I think, Terry, no matter what your views are in the Middle East, the sheer depravity of some of the stuff we've been seeing here is really giving, I think, Terry, more people than usual, giving them cause and pause.
Yeah, I mean, these people are, you know, we thought that ISIS was really bad, and they certainly were, and Al-Qaeda, you know, with plotting the 9/11 attacks. But with Hamas's recent attack on Israel, this is a level of savagery that I don't think we've seen. I'm not sure that I have in my lifetime. The stories that you hear about you know, babies being snatched from their parents and babies being decapitated. It's a whole level of depravity that just absolutely escapes me in terms of my memory of anything else. But, you know, what I'm looking at right now, and one of the things that's going on that I think is perhaps will give a lot of people pause, is that it looks like President Biden may visit Israel in the near future, which is really interesting. I mean, I think it would send a good message in that, you know, we stand with Israel and we take this incredibly seriously. But I don't, it just presents so many security problems. I don't know how you do that because, you know, the big airport, of course, is Ben Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv. And Tel Aviv traditionally has been, you know, the safest big city in Israel because it's the farthest away from the West Bank and it's not near Gaza, relatively speaking. But Israel's only about the size of New Jersey. So really, you know, no matter where you go, you're not that far from anywhere else. But I think it was just on Monday when the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, was meeting with Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister, air raid sirens went off in Tel Aviv, and they had to be shunted down to a bunker. So I don't know whether it's practical to have the president go and visit a nation, a very small nation that is not only on a war footing, but it's very much in a war atmosphere. So I don't know. I'm not sure that he should make the trip. What do you think?
Terry, I ask why, and maybe later on, maybe after the ground invasion where there's a little more security, but this isn't like Abe Lincoln going to the front as he did in the Civil War or, you know, Churchill visiting a battle area. I mean, you know, back then you didn't have such sophisticated weaponry that maybe could have reached them. So, yeah, and look, I'm sure you're right. The security situation is such that it may be called off, but, you know, at least he would make the effort here. Couple of things in the time we have left, I see. You're working on, and this is fascinating, Terry, because I talk about this all the time, Kamala Harris. And it's not like, I mean, forget the Republicans or even some independents. It's not like Democrats, Terry, are really rallying some resounding support for her. She is really in a unique situation coming up on the election.
Yeah, you know, I would say so. And, you know, there was in the reason I'm writing this is I think it's been an undercovered story in many ways. But there was a big cover story in the New York Times Magazine last week, sort of profiling Harris and some of her problems. And you know, one of the things that really is amazing is she actually, her approval ratings are slightly, her disapproval ratings are slightly higher than Biden's. You know, and you just, I mean, because Biden's are terrible. He's up to like 54% of the people disapprove of the job he's doing as president. Hers are 55. And hers, you know, the rose, I think that her disapprovals were only about 37% about a year and a half ago. And so that's really quite the meteoric rise. But this piece in the Times essentially says that she's, you know, she's been an elected official for quite a long time. But she was a San Francisco DA, and then she was the Attorney General for California. And, you know, prosecutors, when they run for election, they don't really have to lay out a broad vision for the future or anything. Yeah. They're focused on law enforcement pretty much and a few issues. And they think that she has struggled with that because sometimes she'll sit down in an interview you know, a reporter will ask her, well, what's your, you know, your vision for America? And that should be one that you could just knock out of the park. But she'll say things like, well, I think you need to be more specific, or, you know, something like that. And
and Terry, if you remember, that was the same question that tripped up Ted Kennedy early going. Remember, he had this early interview when he wanted to run, I guess when he was going to challenge, I think, Jimmy Carter in 1980. And how do you, and he bungled that. I mean, it was a word salad. Yeah. How do you not, how do your handlers, Terry, not say, well, be ready for this question? It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. And I remember the Ted Kennedy interview in 1980. I was in college, and I watched it, and I remember Roger Mudd.
Of course, he interviewed him. Yeah.
And he just asked him, you know, why do you want to be president? And it was like, you know, Ted Kennedy had never really thought about it. But this is a common problem that the Kennedys have, because, you know, Joe Kennedy, young Joe Kennedy, who challenged Ed Markey 2 years ago for, you know, the Democratic nomination for Senate, mm-hmm. You know, they would ask him, why do you want to be? And he didn't really have an answer either, because Markey is, you know, he's very liberal. And Joe Kennedy is just like, well, I don't know, you know, my family is in this and I want to do it. And basically, it's a sense of entitlement, I think, is what it is. Kennedy privilege. And she just didn't have a ready answer when the reporter asked her that. And I think there's been a number of other problems, but I pointed out on Twitter once that I just didn't think she was that good a politician, and that was a problem. And I got attacked immediately
from some social media
accounts that were basically self-identified as Kamala Harris Rapid Response Team.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know how they do this, but they find anybody who says anything negative about Kamala Harris, and they come out and they accuse them of being racist and sexist and everything else. And I just thought, wow, these people are really vicious.
Of course. And Terry, you know, look, you and I are in the communications business. I've been doing this 40 years. You do a lot of media appearances. Part of her problem is, and I say this on the air all the time, has nothing to do with her race, has nothing to do with her being a woman. But, Terry, you know that there are certain things that make an impression on people, the voice, the delivery, the way you phrase things. And you and I both know she's got this problem of kind of going into this strange kind of cackle, or it's a nervous laugh when she gets nervous at a question. And, I think that hurts her. Just to wrap up here, you mentioned Twitter, Terry, and you have now abandoned it. What do I hear here?
Yeah, you know, it was partly because of the experience I had with this Kamala Harris thing.
Wow.
But it's also the problem I have with the fact, Elon Musk, I think it's taken a platform that had some problems and turned it into just a complete mess, because he has, in the spirit of free speech, which he wanted to restore because he thought there was too much censorship, he's sort of gone in the other extreme. And so we have, basically, you have people being rewarded for bad behavior. And that's the way the business model is now. And also, I see Elon Musk actually directing people to fake news sites and anti-Semites. He will point people to say, if you want to see what's going on in Israel in the war, go to these people. And he shows you these sites. He later deleted the tweet. Mm. But it was just, I thought, I can't stand by and actually just take this anymore. You know, I need to go. I'm on Threads.
Okay.
Which is the Twitter knockoff that was started by Zuckerberg and Meta. And I'm still on a couple of the other obscure ones like Post News and Mastodon.
Mastodon.
Yeah, I just couldn't do it anymore. So,
now, listen, you make those decisions sometimes. No, listen, it's not like they're the only game in town. Terry, thank you. Terry Cowgill. Find his local stuff at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and he blogs on Substack as well. Terry, be good, and we'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
All right. Very good, Paul. Thank you.
Be good. All right.